Hi, boy.
We have contact.
We have contact. Right, let's get to it. Pluto squaring Saturn, I think, is the main thing in your pot right now, isn't it, really? Yeah. As a question, wouldn't you say?
Well, I haven't really been thinking about what's been going on in astrological terms, but yeah, that...
Okay. Well, that is what's going on in astrological terms, which means that's what's going on, really. Because it's... Because in a way, that transit kind of... Well, any transit, the idea of astrology is to say, well, what is going on? And astrology does tell you. And that one really is about, you know, is pinching your Saturn in the eighth house in Aries, which is the unaspected Saturn, which is... its weakness, I suppose, is because it's unaspected. It looks for some kind of somebody to look up to, yeah? A figure of authority that one can model oneself on. Ideally, you know, traditionally, is supposed to be one's father, yeah?
Yeah.
Or any older male, and then knocks on to that. But then that gets complicated because in the eighth house, it's it gets into a power game. Yeah.
Right.
And the last time this happened in your life was when you were about between 5 and 7. Can you remember what was going on then?
That was the divorce time.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, and then there was another man was in the picture, of course, which was Michael.
Yeah.
A big part of the divorce. Yeah.
So I suppose as a young lad... that would kind of split. Well, I mean, what was your attitude to your father then, anyway?
I don't know, Len. It's
vague.
Funny enough, I just dreamt about this last night. Timely enough, I dreamt that I was actually writing down what I could remember about my father, and I began with the earliest memories of my father of his smell, this manly smell, and of the roughness of his stubble.
Yes.
And I believe that's true. I didn't remember that or have that thought until this dream, but I think that's actually accurate. I think I do remember enjoying his stubble and the smell.
Yeah, right.
Would have been a factor also for a child. And then the next thing I wrote in the dream was that because my father left when I was 7 and because my memory only begins around that time, it's like I never had a father. And then I broke down in the dream and it became this huge emotional catharsis.
Yeah, very eighth house, yeah, because house of catharsis. So, and Pluto, the planet of catharsis. So that's very much in the script.
Mm.
But it's about earning your wings, isn't it, really?
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that it's all about Aries energy. It's about being independent. It's about being independent, yeah? And how everything around you is challenging you to the independence. It's challenging you to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
And a man in the sense of subtly, really, not in a kind of blokish way, not in a kind of in-your-face, silly way. This earning of your wings, as I'm calling it, which you can take to be of freedom, able to move, fly to wherever you want to get to be free of that feeling of...
weight?
Sorry?
Of weight?
Of weight, yeah. What does the weight itself consist of?
Well, it's a symptom, Len, that I have, and Michelle's pointing this out, that I constantly use the word oppressive and oppressed, that I feel oppressed. I have this very bizarre memory of about this time, when after the divorce, about 8 maybe, of wanting to pull the chest of drawers in my bedroom down on top of me and then cry for help. So uh-huh. I would stage this scene and I would be found underneath this chest of drawers. And I've only just started to wonder about what that was about. You know, why do I have this weird memory? I never did that, but why would I have ever even thought about doing that? And the answer would seem to be that because I was under this intolerable weight my whole childhood, and I wanted to enact it in some way, to draw attention to it.
Yeah, sure. But the thing is a weight is something one wants to either understand where it's coming from, or what it's demanding of you. It's what you could call, in a more accessible way, force of circumstances. It's a Saturnian word, right? Weight. Yeah. But force of circumstances is a more, I say, accessible way of describing it. Mm-hmm. A weight just implies being squashed and not being able to move, right? But force of circumstances are challenging you to get out from under.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say this first of all. You have a wonderful collection, assembly, symphony of talents and awareness. You just do, right? But what lets you down are those planets which are kind of dragging their feet, is that the right word? It's rather like if you were a team of horses, there's this young horse that's kicking and wants to sort of do its own thing, whereas most of the team are really sure of themselves and what they're going to do and what pace they do it. Do you see what I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the pressure is, you might say, the disciplining of the Aries stroke Mars energy.
Right.
And the weight of it won't go away until that is realized, how deeper and important a lesson that is, because if it wasn't for the brilliance of the rest of the team, yeah, it wouldn't matter so much, because it's kind of letting the side down, you could say.
Right.
And what it is that kind of callow part of you, right, which we all have, but with you it's a bit more critical because the greater part of you is so evolved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So the greater part, in comparison to the lesser part can be made to feel inadequate, and so it kicks and protests and makes scenes, as you say, even more to say, I'm actually in distress, I can't get in line, I feel inadequate, I'm all these things, when really all your higher self is saying would just get in line. Sebastian, with his moon Neptune, which is not, it's very psychic, it's very intuitive, it's very slippery too. And how I put it together, and you can, I like you to use your great intuition to add to it, or even, you know, to enhance it, or to make it a lot more accurate, is it's like, this is what I've written, earnestness outwitted by trickery. That's what I found myself writing about your karmic connection with Sebastian. Now, so what does that statement say to you?
Well, the first thing is, when you're talking about karma, then because I've got no knowledge or memory of past lives, or even certainty that there is such a thing, then I would look for something very, very early in this life. Like going, and of course that's accurate with Sebastian, he was there when I was born, so practically my first encounter, or my very first encounter with Mars energy would have been him, his prodding and poking and stabbing. So the earnesty versus trickery could actually have been a dynamic that was there from the start, which was that he was and has always been very sneaky.
Yes.
And he was like that as a kid, you know, as an adolescent, so he was probably even like it very early on, and it seems very likely that he did get up to all kinds of mischief with me, possibly when I was very, very young, even as a baby. And
yes.
That I wouldn't have been able to express that as a baby. I mean, the earnestness of a baby is pre-verbal, isn't it? It's just that total openness.
Yes.
And but then later, even when I could express it, it's possible that my earnest attempt to express what was going on was overridden by his trickery and his deceit.
That's right.
That is the polarity, yeah. And the model, we'll call it, of the past life where he outwitted you with his kind of craftiness, you know, and he can still continues to do so. There's some sort of myth about that, isn't there? It's not exactly the tortoise and the hare, but something like that. You know?
Well, it's very similar to Set and Osiris, isn't it? Because Set tricks Osiris into getting into the coffin and then nails it shut.
Of course it is. Of course it is. It's actually it's a dead ringer, actually. Yeah. Right. And so, like Osiris, you've got to die, haven't you?
Yeah.
And wasn't he taken apart?
Yeah, he was dismembered and scattered across the land. Yeah.
So, in order to kind of, if the jigsaw is put together wrong, you've got to dismember it to put it back together right, haven't you?
Yeah.
Which is what you're doing. It's a painful business, but you see, the thing about you is that you've got something worth fighting for. You've got something worth endeavouring for. You see, there's a jewel in your crown, which is worth the trouble, yeah? I said, in danger of comparing you to Sebastian, he hasn't.
Hmm.
He's suffering illusion, purely because he's not, it doesn't even have a chink of the fact that he's doing that very thing. You know you're suffering illusions somewhere, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, do you?
That I'm suffering from an illusion and under the illusion of suffering.
Your illusion. Now this is important because it's like. For the general to admit defeat, he has to recognise where he has not been admitting defeat.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get what I'm saying? And that means he has to recognise where he's been deluding himself.
Yeah, and I think that Sebastian, the function that he's serving, besides that of the petty tyrant, which might be worth going into in general,
sure,
is that of the mirror, and so he's reflecting back at me a certain distortion that I don't want to see in a very exaggerated form, this lack of integrity.
Yes. Yeah, I can see that. Again, it's that's kind of all part of that reflecting back what I call the previous lifetime. You know, that look at you, clever old you. You can't get a better of me, can you? With all your high flown knowledge and philosophy and spirituality and what have you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I mean, if I met Sebastian now and he wasn't my brother and we didn't have this past history, then it would be a cinch. The conversation would be over in no time, wouldn't it?
I know what you're trying to say, but not necessarily. I mean, energy is energy. If his chart interlocked with yours now rather than when you were a boy, right, that would mean that you hadn't been in his childhood either, right?
Yeah.
So look at it that way around. I haven't done Sebastian's trans scan for a whole life because I haven't had time. But I dare say I'd find I can do that in a jiffy. Let's just look at the year that you came into his life, yeah. Mm-hmm. And what happened? What was going on with him transit wise? So one second. A lot going on. Uranus squaring his Mars, Neptune squaring his Mercury, Pluto square. So the Uranus conjunction. So yeah, that's a big one in your chart comparisons. I mean, I could look for simple by doing that, couldn't I? Which I have drawn up. But I'm not from your point of view. In other words, yeah, your Uranus and Pluto conjunction squares his Mars. So your very presence, right? Your very arrival, your very birth, right? Because it's your Pluto Uranus in the first house. Was challenging his Mars in Gemini, which is very much his main foil, isn't it?
Yeah, his masculine.
But what that would have meant. Sorry?
His sexuality.
It is very much sexuality, but it's like typical Mars and Gemini sexuality. It's more about relieving nervous tension rather than anything else. Did you see that? It's a very adolescent.
Right.
It's a very adolescent sexuality. It's, numbers, quantity rather than quality.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying about if you met now, as it were, he wouldn't have had, when he was 5 years of age, whatever it is, yeah, 4 or 5 years of age, he wouldn't have had an influence threatening his male supremacy. Because up until then, you haven't got any other brothers, have you?
No.
Jason. No. Jason, sorry. So, that was his male, burgeoning male supremacy, you know.
Right.
Totally challenged and threatened, basically, right there and then. Okay, so he learned very quickly then, right, let's use my Mars, my Geminian sword, that two-edged sword, slice, slice, poke, poke, tease, tease, you know, all that kind of stuff, yeah?
Yeah.
Sarcasm, all that equipment. He started to use that right away. He thought, right, I better get this weapon in good nick. At the same time, with Neptune squaring his Mercury, he would have been paranoid. He would have been. He had thought. Yeah, it would have confused him. It would have confused him greatly. He couldn't have understood why you should be there at all. And so, going back to the scenario, if you met him now and he wasn't your brother, right? He wouldn't have that history. He wouldn't be a person who'd experienced that kind of challenge to his masculinity when he was 4 or 5 years of age. Do you see what I'm getting at? Although he would have done, he'd have the same child, but it wouldn't have been you.
Right.
You wouldn't be, the one in the frame.
Mm-hmm.
So turning it around, see, he still sees you as a threat. But in typical older brother scenario, he has the upper hand. Because babies are totally indefensible.
Yeah.
Or undefended, I should say. Yeah? Apart from the mother and the father, which weren't doing a very good job in their respective roles, were they?
No.
But that's what you chose. You had to have that kind of setup in order for you to I'm looking at what else was going on when your parents split up and your father left, you see that. This is such an important age that because you see Uranus is opposing your Sun and squaring your Jupiter and conjoining your Mars around that time as well as Pluto square opposing it. And so that would have been like there's still something here about your masculinity, which is your maleness, which is I haven't quite got my hand around yet.
Well. can we bring it to what you're talking about, maybe, and like how my brother's sexuality and his mother's was threatened directly by my birth. So,
yes,
he struck back in some way.
He had to disempower you, yeah.
So, disempowering me would be entail in some way putting his hands on my sexuality.
Yes.
So that could...
Taunting it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have fairly early, like 5, 6 memories of him taunting me for stuff and oppressing me, but not specifically anything around my sexuality. But what I'm exploring now to get a better shape of these wounds, to know what it is that I'm really letting go of here, and to have a, you know,
yes,
a fuller picture of the true narrative that's been concealed under the false narrative, is the possibility of him actually sexually manhandling me in some way.
Yeah, very likely. Very likely. Because of the Saturn in the 8th house, you see, because the Saturn in the 8th house is the house of sexuality, of intimacy, of private parts, you know. And for your Saturn to be got at that age, along with Uranus conjoining your Mars, that would figure.
Mm.
But whatever was the actuality, he's using everything he's got to diminish your masculinity,
mm-hmm.
To disempower you. Yeah, and if it means literally doing something to your cock. At such a tender age, then you do have to explore that. But what does it make you feel right now?
Well, I'm going into my head, really, rather than into my body, I guess. Although I did, the first thing I thought was that my penis has given me problems, just in terms of being very sensitive, which actually isn't a problem. Like, you know, that's part of my Saturn chastity belt, isn't it? But it's a fact that I am quite sensitive down there, and so that's the first thing that I got, was just that message from my body. But then I was perhaps, you know, uncomfortable with going into the actual physical memory of whatever might have happened, and so going off into more theoretical stuff in the present and the more recent past, which is the way that we have been, you know, as this binary system, he's become this libertine and I've become the aesthete, and so my sexuality has been,
yes,
under wraps. And so it's as though maybe metaphorically or maybe even literally that he's been using my sexual energy for his pursuits, and so I haven't been able to access it.
One could look at it that way. The way I look at it is possibly, again, more intellectual but or spiritual, but I'd have simply look at the charts and I see his Mars is near to his ascendant in Gemini. There aren't constraints on it, really. Yeah, it's very much in his face or somebody else's, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas yours is mentalized. It's in Libra. I mean, I got Mars in Libra, as you know. I think, as you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Mars in Libra is not a lot of laughs for a man, because he's having to consider the ways of others. He's having to, whether consciously or unconsciously, it has to be a very kind of well-mannered cock. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Whereas Mars in Gemini is a cheeky cock.
Right.
Yeah, a superficial cock. Yeah. looking at it in that way is quite useful, actually, just describing yourself as a cock, what kind of cock it is, yeah? And so it's just, you know, the difference, you know, that he hasn't got those constraints. He hasn't got that kind of sensitivity.
But this would be an advantage, wouldn't it, in the way that he set up the conflict between us, having that primary advantage, being over me and bigger than me. He set up this dynamic between our cocks, and he's at the advantage because he's got this invulnerable Superman cock, and I've got this super sensitive.
Precisely. Exactly. That's really putting it in a nutshell, really. But you see, you're in a different league. Not a different planet. You see, that to me is one of the first things that also came to me looking at your chart, sir, is that you're just, you know, different orbits, but the orbits happen to collide at a certain point.
So then probably the best way to understand the dynamic between us, it would be that of my brother as a petty tyrant, do you think?
Again, yes, on the level that's what he is, but two, on the level of the danger of labeling him that is that he continues to be it.
Mm-hmm. But that's the point, is that I need a petty tyrant.
Yeah, okay, but
because you've talked about this weight and how it's there to get me in line, and that's what the petty tyrant does.
Yeah, but why do you need the petty tyrant? Well, my petty tyrant was my mother. So you're saying, and that was for me to see. It's kind of a paper tiger thing, isn't it? Really. That's what I would say in both Leos, in both cases. So I think it's a kind of, it's a brilliant, actually. Where, but look, it's a petty tyrant, but petty tiger, and it's even the same initial letters. And more is the point. It's a paper tiger rather than a petty tyrant.
Right. So it's a projection of our own fears and limitations.
Yeah, because it's a big screen which makes noises, right? And doesn't sort of collapse because it has that kind of, it's made of that kind of paper. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that drawing too close a parallel. I mean, my mother, when she, you know, in her declining years, you know, it was almost tragic to see how much of an illusion she'd created and held over all us children, yeah?
Yeah.
This fierce lion who was driven by fear, really.
Yeah.
And
cowardly lion.
Yeah, it's very convincing. Yeah, all you're seeing is the roaring and the size. If you're going to have a petty tyrant or a paper tiger, you know, Leo makes a good sign for it.
Hmm.
Because they are a tyrannical sign, you know. Famous example is Mussolini and Napoleon.
And who?
Napoleon.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You see, and so it is a tyrannical sign.
But you mentioned having a relationship with my brother, and so, but what sort of relationship are we talking about? Because he's not speaking to me. I don't have anything to say to him, really.
I'm glad of that. And I'm not talking about relationship in reality. I'm talking about relationship in the sense of how you relate to him as, you know, in your head, or in your stomach, or in your cock.
Yeah.
And that how you are seeing that particular entity called Sebastian.
Mm-hmm.
He has been what sort of dismembered you, okay, back to the set kind of parallel.
Mm.
And so therefore he is what set you up to put yourself together again.
Right. So then he's an ally, an unconscious ally.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
So then is it wrong of me, or is this earnest of me to, and I don't want to say want, because then that makes it seem like it's a motive, but to feel that there's something that I can do that will be of use to him by expressing, by working this.
No, you don't want to do that at all. You're doing it purely for yourself. You're expunging, you're putting it right, you're making it conscious. You are, by being psychically, by being free of him, then energetically, he might, just might, pick something up of use to him.
Right.
But I would not make him the objective. He is an energy which you want to disentangle yourself from, but not by disentangling yourself from it directly, by going in the direction which you need to go. Otherwise, it's like one of those, what do they call those sort of things you put over your finger and you pull, it grips the finger.
Yeah, the fake Chinese finger trap.
That's what it is. Yeah.
So then my dilemma is that what I'm doing is so much a part of what I'm doing anyway, and it's, on the one hand, it has everything to do with Sebastian because he's the protagonist,
yeah,
in a way, of my narrative. That's what I'm seeing, that my whole life now, I haven't actually been in the driver's seat that my brother has. It's like he's been controlling me from afar because of those early implants, obviously not just my brother, but he's like the bad guy. He's the antagonist.
So you're going to make your Mars and your Sun and your Saturn your own, such as they are.
Right.
And to make them your own, you have to. It's like rather like, you know, when you've installed some software incorrectly, yeah, you have to uninstall it and then reinstall it. Ah, it's taken apart, so you can put it together again. As I said before, using a jigsaw analogy, yeah. It's nothing to do with Sebastian other than he was the agent, he was your ally. Call it what you like, right? Someone had to. Make it clear to you that there's parts of you not screwed on. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So that you get round to cleaning them up and screwing them on properly in the right places.
Right. But what I was trying to get at, Lynn, is that my whole process is public now. That's actually part of my process.
Okay.
Is that I'm doing it in the public realm. And so for me not to make this part of it, that would be like a special concession. I'd be saying, well, because I'm compromised, you know, because I want it to be clean and want to do it for the right reasons, then I'm going to destroy this and nobody's going to see it. That would be the reason to do it, because I didn't trust myself to kind of lose energy by doing it.
I didn't really follow that. I didn't follow what you're saying.
Well, this process that I'm working through is a process that, like all the other processes, or it's just an aspect of the greater process, which part of which is my sharing it with other people anyway, because that's kind of what I'm doing now as a, you might even say as an entertainer, but that's probably me trying not to be earnest there. I don't even really care.
I got dangerously convoluted, but go on.
What I'm really doing here, Lynn, it's just... It's
right, not to...
I'm sure it's there, very evident in my chart in somewhere, that for me to actually expose my inner workings is just part and parcel of how I see those inner workings myself. I'm like in the...
Yeah, but we just run across the antidote to it all. It is humour.
Mm.
You know, it really is the antidote. It's like saying, you know, what? You know, it's by antidote, it's not just antidote, it's also what accompanies it. It balances it out. And let's face it, Mars is in Libra. It is about balancing something out. And I would say, and third house is also the house of humour. And so it's all an illusion, it's all a joke, isn't it? What do we know? Yeah? as we talk so earnestly now about your earnestness, you know, it's like, ha, ha, ha. I mean, if Sebastian heard this, he'd be laughing his balls off.
Yeah.
Which is the joke, isn't it? But we're going to get one step ahead of that, really.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, if you're sharing it and it's in the public domain, the important thing, and I applaud Michelle for spotting that, the earnestness in the first half of it, because that would be some things are not for public consumption. It's called, you know, airing a dirty laundry in public.
Yes, but that's exactly this unwritten rule that I'm consciously breaking now, because that's a major element in what keeps these false narratives in place. I don't give a damn about airing my dirty laundry in public because I'm not attached to my own dirt or my own secrets. And so that means that I'm applying that same kind of lack of consideration for my thoughts and feelings to everybody else's.
Which I don't think the Mars and Libra likes, to be honest with you.
But our thoughts and feelings don't matter. They don't count. And all of our dirty laundering is going to be aired. So if it makes good entertainment, if it's something...
As long as you're in the spirit of that, then no problem. But pardon me if I got this all wrong, but the last hour of talking with you would imply that you don't see the funny side of it.
Because we're not making jokes about it, but I mean, I haven't gone deep enough into it yet for humour to be true humour and not defensive humour.
Is that where you reckon it's going to go?
What?
Into the end, you'll just laugh at it all and go, goodness me, what a load of old, you know, anal, what have you.
Well, I don't know if I'll say it was all a lot of anal stuff, but to laugh at it, yeah. Yeah.
And what would you find funny about it? When all is said and done.
When all is said and done.
Go on.
Well, I suppose I'm guessing that what I'd find funny about it is that earnestness and how seriously I took it all.
And why would that be funny? If it isn't too earnest a question.
Well, maybe it would be the laughter of recognition.
Yeah, when I hear you laugh, I hear your greatness. Burrowing towards, isn't it? Well, at least what you're trying to disentangle your earnestness from.
And to find my way back to that laughter, because I didn't laugh as a kid. I barely even smiled, and now I'm really finding out why. What it was that robbed me of my voice and that have stolen that laugh from my throat.
Yeah, it is all about seeing your own jokes. And you know, it's a general admission to defeat gracefully or even humorously, because it's like, you know, what has been lost. Obviously, it's like, you know, it's the Aries stakes, isn't it? You know, battles won and lost. And in what way are they won and lost? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, your new laugh, it puts me in touch with your greatness more effectively than anything, because it makes me feel that greatness isn't compromised by earnestness, isn't compromised by taking himself too seriously, because. Fair enough, psychologically, he wasn't taken seriously enough as a child.
Mm.
But you and I both know that psychology isn't the be-all and end-all, because it's like we enter this world psychological textbook. We're in it to deal with stuff, prove stuff, surrender stuff, and having some kind of It's like political correctness, isn't it? It's like, you know, having some psychological condition to excuse us from why we're here. You know, is objectionable, isn't it?
Well, yeah, this is very telling, Lynn, because if you talk about humour, this is the one quality that my brother has that is admirable. He's funny.
Exactly.
He will laugh at anything, including himself. So that maybe that's the baby in the bathwater here. Like, what's on offer?
Yeah, I thought that when I saw him, and I thought that the Sebastian Horsley's Guide to Whoring, you know, it was like it was just, you know. It was very funny, but like all humorists and comedians, they're hiding a manic depressive.
Well, yeah. So I mean, that defensive armor of humor is the lower octave, isn't it? And that's something that is never going to work for me.
Of course, but yeah, quite. We're not saying you're going to use him as a role model, but
but there's an element in there because. I mean, this is also what writing the piece has kind of brought to light, is that, I mean, the thing that actually triggered the recognition of what had happened with my brother and how deeply he was in my psyche was recognizing how his voice was in my head. Uh-huh. And whenever I would write a piece, I would think, imagine him reading it. And so it was like he was there, the judge, constantly criticizing and challenging everything I did.
Yeah.
And so this has sort of come to a head now with this piece, because I know that the way to write it that would be true would be to write it in a way that actually my brother could get it.
Yes, but the earnestness creeps in again by your trying to prove something to him.
Well, no, but that wouldn't be it. It wouldn't be, because he would never get it. He probably couldn't even read it because of where he's at. But for me, like me and my inner Sebastian, for me to find a voice that is absolutely true to me and yet could get past that guardian, that won't take a moment's earnestness, that won't, you know, that will destroy, you know, me at the first...
It's funny you're saying how his voice, right? It's like... I've written here my notes, which I can't quite understand why I wrote it, but it's somehow fitting with what you're saying now. I put here, Simon is the voice, double underline in the capitals, of naive simplicity, as a foil veiled to the complexity of his emotional... as a foil and veiled to complexity and emotional surrender.
Who is Simon?
Sebastian.
Oh, Sebastian, you said Simon.
I'm sorry about that. I don't know why I did. Yeah. Oh, because of the simple simplicity, simple Simon. Yeah, that's probably why. Yeah. Yeah, Sebastian is the voice of naive simplicity as a foil veil to complexity and emotional surrender. He's a bloke battling sensitivity.
Right.
See his sadness, I've written. Now, I've written, you're bigger than that, or ought to be. See, he is your shadow in so many ways.
Yeah.
It's definitely kind of the inverse of you. You know, you're serious and deep on the outside, and I mean, I'm finding funny on the inside. He's the other way around.
Right.
And so there is kind of. If there's a kind of inner marriage, that's where it lies. There's certain greatness and tragedy all in there. That is implicit in any kind of myth about, you know, sibling rivalry, or any kind of myth period, you know, of any kind of myth of conflict anyway. Yeah, that's somewhere down the line. You know, you own it. And see that it's just our shadow play.
Mm.
Hardest thing in the world, but the most worthwhile thing in the world is to own our shadows.
It's the opus.
Sorry? It's the opus, yeah, it is indeed. It is, yeah. And so you kind of love him for it, really.
But you've got to get to that point of loving yourself first, because you can't love anybody any more than you love yourself. You know, speaking in the true sense of love, of acceptance and kind of celebration of your being, warts and all.
Yeah.
But I think the writing out, okay, for the whether it's public or not, but that I'm still, jury's out in my head a bit about that still. I'm still a little bit worried that that could be part of the Saturn fixture, which Pluto's trying to blow away.
Yeah. That of the writer?
That of the writing it out, of letting other people see your dirty laundry.
Is it writing particularly, or is it expressing it?
It's expressing it. Put it this way, I mean, it's what I call the shit pad. You know, it's often when I can't write something, it's because I've got something in the way. It's back to the old crock in the road, you know. I'll just write an automatic stuff, and it comes out, and it'll be lots of stuff, and blah 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 blah, blah. And it might it's like journal stuff, isn't it? You know, you're not necessarily going to show anybody it. It's just so you get it out of your system.
Yeah.
The trouble is, and this is where my bone of contention is, if it's not just for your eyes only, or somebody who truly understands you, and then again, that's asking quite a lot. Anyway, if it's going to be shared, it's in danger of not being flushed away.
Yeah, that was what I was getting at before. There might be a way to actually compromise the process by sharing it. And yet the paradox of the contradiction is, I think, that to do it as a true sorcery, it does have to be accessible to the world, even if the world never saw it, because I'm making it impersonal.
Yeah, but if the world... Then it earns your reputation of being a bit more earnest... Of being, yeah, then it's kind of a bit sort of, you know, counterproductive.
Well, hold on. I mean, Ernest, as you said, is a surrogate. It's a simulation, and besides innocence, which is something that is much harder to get to, isn't earnestness just a simulation of honesty?
Yeah. Earnestness. I'm tempted to look up what the bloody word means, literally. Hang on. I have a very big dictionary by my hand.
It's Oscar Wilde sync as well, isn't it?
That's right, yes. A great deal of it is absolutely fatal.
That's sincerity, isn't it? Sincerity is like a bit of it's very important, but a great deal of it's absolutely fatal, or something like that. Mm-hmm.
But Oscar Wilde is a timely example, because he's a wag, and actually you can't trust most of what Oscar Wilde says.
Certainly not.
Because the truth is pure and simple, isn't it?
It is. The dictionary isn't telling me what it means. I don't know. It usually does.
Well, that's a useful dictionary.
This is a dictionary that's fairly earnest enough for me. it is. I think it's from. Old English, Urnost. So it must be a root word. Yeah, it is a root word. It's been around a long time. That's why it takes some beating.
That's what makes it earnest, isn't it?
That's right. I know that I was going somewhere, but I remain. Yes.
An old tradition.
But it is, I mean, it is this balance, you know, it is that earnestness, the opposite to earnestness is being light-hearted and self-mocking.
Yeah, and that can be a virtue. No, it is a virtue to have that's the antidote to self-importance also, isn't it? To have the irony and the self-effaced.
Terribly much so. Terribly, and as I said, when I hear you laugh and your awareness of your own, you know, joke, your own kind of weight, well, it lightens you up. It lights you up, and actually in both senses, it makes it lightens you up. It lightens you up in terms of weight, and it also illuminates you. Mm.
But isn't this what I'm doing in a way? I mean, isn't this? I hope so. The motive, you know, the drive behind my honesty, and I'll freely admit it, it's somewhat compulsive honesty, and of sharing this stuff and putting it all out there. The drive is to unburden myself. You know.
So that gets to the point where I say, so what's the problem?
So what's the problem with what?
Yeah. Well, why are you bothering to talk with me? You know what I'm saying? Why are you consulting me? Why is it an issue? Why is it oppressing you? Why is it all this a problem? If it's been released, if it's been dealt with, if it's been therapied by you doing this,
yeah,
sharing it, and spitting it out, blah, blah, whatever,
yeah,
then no problem, yeah?
No, there isn't a problem. But there's a certain lack of clarity, because this is such a, you know, a deep wound, and so as I go into it, it scrambles my...
That's okay. It's like having a big shit, really.
Uh-huh. Just take your time. Don't rush it.
Make a few straining noises every so often, but don't overdo it. You know, otherwise I have a sore ass. It's okay, you know. I mean, that's all part of the kind of Plutonian elimination, isn't it?
Mm.
Ongoing. You know, there'll be something, when you got rid of this one, there'll be something else coming down the line.
Well, yeah, I'm fully aware of that.
Sorry?
I'm fully aware of that. It's maybe that's partly why I savour the process, because I know there's no end to it.
Now you're talking. Yeah. Because you see, when you factor that savouring of the profit process and the humour and the self-parody, when all those things are factored into what you're writing, which they will be eventually, then that's great, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's somebody who's liberated rather than who's just sort of done some bypassing.
See, and I am a communicator. That's the thing. I mean, that's kind of what I'm here for, isn't it? Like, on a sort of surface level.
Well, you are, but you see, because Mars is in the house communication along with Neptune, you see, Neptune is part of that grand, that tight, and also configured with, you know, and it's got double configuration of that double opposition, but that Neptune in your third house is the communicator who enlightens, right, and relieves with his communications, right? But the Mars is in there too, being right, a bit of a fucker, right? That is the crock in the road. That's what the bit that gets got to be cleaned up, get out of the way. Interestingly, the Sabian symbol for your Mars is a man in the midst of brightening influences.
Hmm.
And a man even from Mars, you see, and is in the midst of brightening influences. But if his eyes are closed and he's looking earnestly at the dashboard, right, he's not going to get the brightening influences, is he?
Mm-hmm.
And the brightening influences, which we've experienced a few times in our chat, have been the humour and points of clarity.
Mm-hmm.
But you are in the midst of them. It's just a matter of allowing them in to your eighth house darkness. It is really, yeah, kind of step into the light, chum. Now I see what you're saying. It's all in the name of being seen, isn't it, really?
Mm-hmm.
By exposing yourself.
Right. Exactly.
You're being seen.
Because then there's no way to hold on to it anymore. If everybody's seen it, then I can let it go.
We'll just carry on writing the tablets.
Well, is that how the penny dropped for you with the Sabian symbol for Mars, is that Mars is actually being exposed by all of this brightness around him?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So then Mars can just stop doing what he's doing and just be exposed.
Yeah, he catches himself being himself, which isn't quite what he thought he was. That's a surrender. When you get up on stage, it's not like good comedians, like one the ones that get up there and are basically stream of consciousness stuff, like Eddie Izzard and what's his face, Russell Brand. They're doing what you're saying in public, right? They're getting up actually doing it live, in fact, right? And they're chanting whatever's coming through them at that time, which might be utterly offensive, and there'd be people before them who've died a terrible death, like, you know, Lenny Bruce, for instance, you know, who there's too much taboo's been broken for the public to take. But I think we're not in Lenny Bruce's age. Mm-hmm. We're now in an age when there are very few holy cows, aren't there?
There's a few still out there.
Yes, and I'm going to get them.
So, but you're talking about playful, aren't you? Mars's is best expression is his playfulness.
Most things are, actually. I mean, I think that's that's where Leo is strong, because it is playful sign. It's not being earnest.
Right. So then. Well, and so bring it back to the cock. Mars is the cock, and the tendency for Mars is to do, isn't it, rather than to be. And so it's always about focus and purpose driven. And so it's like a man being driven by his cock, rather than just allowing himself to express.
Yeah, exactly. That's the difference between, you know, the Western version of sex and tantra.
So, yeah, exactly. I was getting at. And yet, yeah, tantra would seem to my brother or to somebody who didn't know to be very earnest, but actually it's pure play.
It's pure innocence.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a million miles away from that, I thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you are. I mean, you're on different evolutionary arcs. He must be on some sort of evolutionary arc, but something noticeable. Because he's, the sign that I find most difficult to help is Gemini, because it's so shifty. It keeps dodging. You know, it's the artful dodger of the zodiac, isn't it? Mm. And he's got that double dose of Mars and ascendant. Is again, human's liability is when it starts to be a blind to more earnest truths.
Well, that's the bugger. I mean, in a nutshell, with my brother, like, it's so one of the hardest things with him is just how earnest he forces me to be, because he's just constantly deflecting any truth with his witticisms.
Yeah, but that's because you're engaging with, you know, somebody who you can't convince directly. You can only not even convince, but influence.
No, connect to. It's about connecting to. That's the dynamic in a nutshell between us.
It is, and it kind of goes nowhere when it's left at that level, because it's just, you know, A versus B.
Mm.
You can't really save people from themselves. That is terribly earnest, isn't it? As I say, you know, if people want help, they ask me, and usually they pay me as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
As Blake said, you know, if you wish to help someone, you must do so in the minutest particulars.
What, like carrying their shopping and things like that?
Doing the shopping. it's just that, you know, it's an art being helpful, isn't it? It's the art. It really is an art. And of course, it is Virgo, and it's about being earnest. You need to help people. Helping people is an earnest business, but if you're really good at it, the earnestness doesn't show, because it's counterproductive to the healing.
Right. Well, again, being honest. If one is being honest, then there's really no need to be earnest. In fact, it makes it harder.
Yeah, similar. I love the similarity of the words. Yes, honest and earnest. They sound like two brothers in themselves.
Well, it's self-importance, isn't it? The earnest.
Sorry.
It's another face of self-importance, perhaps, earnestness.
That's what I've been saying, really, because it's. I think the upshot of this mostly is the humour. It's. I mean, you didn't expect to have a laugh at all today, did you?
Well, I didn't rule it out entirely.
I didn't rule it out either. actually something, this little sorceress thing before we go. And so these two areas today, and I went up for a walk, as I walked through the woods, there were these four really big crows, really having some sort of conversation in the trees, and they kept circling us, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd have a conversation in the trees. I thought, well, what are they all about? And then I went up the track, and I came out the top, and by the way, it's a lane. And by the lane, and by a gatepost, there was this, I could see it was a dead sheep, right? Mm-hmm. But I got there, and it was two sheep. Both of them are kind of macabre embrace, both dead.
Wow.
Yeah, quite. Here are these two Aryans I'm going to talk to, with eighth house Aryans, you know.
Wow. It's a binary system.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah? So I'll leave you with that one.